Hello and welcome to Normal Boring Free Birth for Normal Boring People, where we share free birth stories from people who had epic, amazing births, but they also felt quite normal and maybe a bit boring. Before we get into today's episode, I want to talk to you about the Free Birth Women's Circle. So if you don't know about this already, we've been talking about it in our Facebook community. This is the place that you can go if you feel like you want some connection from people who just understand why you're making the choices that you are, and they just get it. The Circle is a virtual space where we meet twice a month and we just connect with other like-minded women who are planning a free birth, or they've had a free birth and they're in the postpartum. Me and Leonie wanted to create an online space where women could come together and just share stories, share wisdom, and connect. I think listening to these amazing free birth stories is great, but actually being able to talk to each other, ask questions, put something out there, that can be really valuable. If you want to join the circle, it's really easy. There'll be a link in the show notes of this episode, or go to our Instagram page and look at the links there at Normal Boring Free Birth. We have a different kind of episode today. We have four voices rather than what's usually three of us. We have two very special guests, and they are our husbands. Leonie and I have brought on our other halves, and we're here to ask them, well, some of our questions, but a lot of yours too, that we've asked online. We kind of felt like there was a need for an episode like this to give a voice to the other side of it that I think we don't often hear. We have so many free birth stories on here, and they're all really kind of from the woman's perspective. And we hear a bit about the birth partner bit, but we don't tend to hear from them. So we've brought ours here, which is both great and a little odd, because it's just different for me, because we'll be talking a bit about my experience, Leonie's. It'll get a bit more personal. So I'll welcome our guests and hand over first to Leonie's husband, Dee. Welcome, Dee, to Normal Boring Free Birth. Would you like to introduce yourself to our listeners?
Hi, Victoria.
Hi.
Thanks for getting me and Dave on the show. It's nice to be here and have a chat together. So my name's Dee, and I'm Leonie's husband, and I'm father to three kids, and we've got another one on the way. And I was present for the free birth of all three of our children, and we're planning another one as well. So, and I'm a carpenter, and I'm also, you know, very hands-on dad. So that's me.
Oh yeah, amazing. Oh yeah, so excited for you guys too, because yeah, we've been hearing a little bit about, well, your journey into like, well, yeah, welcoming a fourth into your family. That's amazing. And yeah, I'm really looking forward to hearing all your perspectives on all the births. That's fantastic. And then welcome to our other guest, my husband, Dave. Welcome to the podcast.
Hello.
What would you like to share with our listeners? Would you like to introduce yourself?
Yeah, so I'm Dave. I am your husband for 7 years.
Yeah.
We've got the two kids. One was a free birth. One was not a free birth.
Yeah.
I'm a musician. And yeah, I'm here to answer your questions.
Yes. Thank you. Thank you for joining us. Right, we've been sent questions from people in our normal boring free birth community and on Instagram, because we've been asking, yeah, what do you want to know from the birth partner perspective? But I want to start off by asking you, Dave, then, do you remember the first time that I ever brought up the idea of birthing without medical assistance, the word free birth? Do you remember that? And how did you feel?
I don't really remember it as a like special event. I don't really remember it as a particular time when it was like, oh, dun dun dun, mic drop, here's this thing I want to do. I seem to remember it more as, because our first birth was not what we wanted and didn't really go how we expected.
Yeah.
There was obviously a lot of us talking and working towards trying to seek a better way of doing it and more in our kind of control and, you know, how we want to do it. But I don't know if we ever really firmly said we are going to do this. I think we just sort of got to that point over time. So yeah, it wasn't really like a kind of like
one defining moment,
sudden revelation. Yeah. No. It was more a, we'll get there after many, many conversations and many things.
yeah but I suppose I feel like for many, you know, that we hear about the resistance, there's a lot of kind of, oh, my partner's not really that into it. And I feel like with you, I don't think you were super on board with the idea in the beginning, which is like fine, you know, I want you to speak freely and like not worry about it. But yeah, I mean, do you remember feeling worried about that as an idea?
Well, yeah.
Because speak a bit about that.
Well, it is. I mean, and, you know, especially because our first birth was so, it was very intense. It was very long. There was many, many hours of being in a hospital, the waiting and the, everyone around us kind of building up this kind of intensity of it and the kind of panic and the feeling of, you know, oh, this isn't going like this, or this is worrying, or we need to watch this heartbeat, or, oh, we need to do this. All these things kept building and building and building, and you found it quite difficult at the time as well, just getting through the labour and everything like that. So the whole thing was quite an experience. It was very intense. There was the sort of classic feeling of, you know, if we weren't there and they hadn't done these things, maybe it would have been worse. It sort of worried me not having that kind of safety net, so to speak, because that's what it's sort of pitched as, isn't it? It's like, you know, if you're in hospital, it's a safety net for anything that could go wrong. That's kind of the traditional viewpoint in the UK of what, you know, maternity care is.
Yeah, anyone around or whatever. But like, yeah, we had lengthy conversations about this. You know, we talked.
Yes, we did.
Because it certainly wasn't like we weren't like in the beginning. Certainly, we weren't in the position of, oh yeah, I think I don't want to call anyone. And then you weren't just, okay, yeah, that's great. We you know, had a lot of discussion, and that was sort of where it started for us, for sure. What about the two of you? I'm really interested in, how were you then, Dee? Well, I'll hand over to you, Leonie. I feel like we'll just take it in turns of asking our other half's questions. But how were you in terms of the very first kind of suggestion of birth, but without that kind of medical support? Do you remember how you felt about that initially?
I was the first one to suggest it.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Yeah. So...
So, I've got a different memory, but okay.
Oh God!
So I was definitely the first one to suggest it. In fact, I was so we have to do this, almost a bit like militant about it.
Right. Okay.
That when my parents said that we couldn't do it at their house because they were uncomfortable about that, and we had nowhere else to go, I actually saved up and bought us a bell tent so we could do it in there.
Oh yeah.
So I just had like when we first found out that Leonie was pregnant, we were sort of we had these very conventional ideas about what the birth was going to be like. It was going to be just like we'd seen in the movies. It was going to be like in a hospital. It was going to be medicalized. There's going to be doctors everywhere, the bright lights and scalpels and whatever else happened, and screaming, you know, like that sort of what we knew birth to be. That's what we've grown up seeing and thinking. And we just felt terrified about the birth. It was like, we were really pleased we were having a kid, but we were like, oh no, it's got to be born.
Yeah.
And we wanted that to be different. And my elder sister, Amanda, we went to visit her in Bristol, and she said, do you know, birth, you know, it doesn't have to be like that. Did you know that there's actually this thing called the positive birthing movement? And she like showed us a couple of videos, and we were both like, wow, this is really cool. And I just sort of like hooked onto that.
Oh,
and to be honest, so did Leonie as well. And she watched a documentary about free birth, a lady that gave birth on a barge with no one else there. And we started talking about free birth as a concept, like, and we both thought it was really cool. And then I just thought that was what we had to do. I just thought that. So my feeling, I was brought up in a religious household and I've always believed in God. And my feeling from day one was that our bodies have been designed to do this. So to act as if it's some like problematic event, I think is not, it's not, it just doesn't fit in my mind. So I sort of like dived into this perspective of, we've got to trust, we've got to have faith, and we've got to trust that it's going to be okay, and that because your body is designed to do this, and if we need help, we can get it.
Yeah.
And Leonie was quite scared about that originally. She felt
me actually having the baby.
Yeah, that's right. Felt, you're the one doing it.
yeah. She felt worried that. And I sort of like, it was almost like the other way around for us. Mm. Like I had to help her to feel safe that if things were to go pear-shaped, so to speak, that we would actually get the proper medical help.
Yeah, because I remember you being really just like practically minded about it, you know, kind of quite pragmatic. You know, we live 10 minutes from a hospital.
Mm. Yeah.
At that time, there were quite reliable ambulance services. It wasn't like we're in the middle of nowhere. I mean, did you ever feel any like fear or what if, you know?
So that's a really good question, because I was actually really grateful for Leonie's input, because she was very much thinking about these different eventualities that could possibly happen. And then if this was to happen, what would we do?
Yeah.
I was actually really grateful to her doing that research, you know, the different elements of birth physiologically and the different signs to notice for different things. I was actually so sure about just trusting in the body and having faith in doing this free birth thing that I didn't actually do any of that research. I was just like, it's going to be fine. We need to believe it's going to be fine. It's all good. Mm. So I was maybe a little bit neglectful of that side of things, whereas Leonie actually was very, very practical, and her sort of like cautions which could stray into fears, and I would really help her to feel safe and grounded when she did get a bit scared, but her cautions were actually, she used them to very good effect to do research, to have a sort of like a safety blanket to notice certain things if we needed to take action or seek medical help.
Well, that's so interesting though, isn't it? Because I feel like we're going to have so many envious listeners who are going, oh, I wish my other half was like that. I wish my partner was just like, I just trust the process and your body and everything. Because it's just not the message we hear often from people who are kind of preparing for it. But yeah, interesting with you guys that, yeah, Dee, you were so positive about it. And then Leonie was having to maybe wade through the more kind of, it sounds like more practical side of it then, and kind of fears, concerns and stuff. Did you then both reach a point where you were just, I don't know, super confident together then? Were you kind of on the same sort of page before the birth, do you reckon? Yeah.
Definitely, yeah. We reached this point, I think it was around when we bought the bell tent, which is a big 5-meter thing. It's like quite comfortable in there. It's really beautiful space. Yeah. And when we put it up, and when we got in there, we were like, this is awesome. And this is the perfect space.
Yeah.
And we actually set up I built some furniture to go in there, and we got our bed set up. And then we actually lived in there for a month.
Yeah.
And in that month, it was a pretty magical month, actually. We went for so many long walks together.
It's your parents' house, because we were in your parents' garden.
Yeah.
It's quite a big garden, and it, you know, backs onto the woods and stuff. It was like,
absolutely,
felt like we were just in the woods.
Yeah, yeah. I remember that was the first time, actually, a bit off topic, but it was the first time I heard the noise of a fox at night,
and
it was really disturbing. It was like, what is that? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. Wild sounds.
Yeah, it's terrifying, that sound.
But it is. Getting in touch with the natural environment really helped the whole vibe just settle. And
I just felt so safe in there. Like we could hear, you know, it was quite windy on some nights and the whole kind of canvas would be shaking, but I just felt such a solidness on the ground.
Yeah, so the first birth, so Leonie had been learning about like what position to be in and what's good to help the baby move down and all this different stuff. And then when the birth actually started happening, it was like so different. It was like Leonie was in all these different positions and it was really intense and scary. And I was just like, but babe, what about the teachings? What about everything you've been learning? You've got to get in the position. And I was just interfering, basically. And eventually I shut up.
Yeah.
Eventually I just shut my mouth. I was like, okay, I understand now. She just wants me to like get her frozen melon for her when she grunts at me for it.
Yeah.
And like, you know, touch her or not. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. So I sort of like, that was really difficult for me because...
But you were so amazing though. Sorry, I've just got to like stroke you a bit because you'd never ever done that before. And in our birth prep, I'd been going well deep into, you know, I was just soaking it all up. And I remember you were doing lots of different stuff. You didn't want to watch the birth videos. You didn't want to see anything else until it was the birth of our first son.
Yeah.
And so the first birth ever that you'd basically seen was your own child being born, and there was nobody else around. There was no midwife. Yeah. We were just in the bell tent in the garden.
Yeah.
And you just responding in real time.
Yeah, I mean, I was still interfering a bit. Looking in hindsight, I'd have done things quite differently. But in the second birth, thank you, that's very sweet of you to say that. In the second birth, the second birth was awesome. I loved it because Leo, I was just falling asleep and then Leonie went, you know that really rosy when you're just about to drift off and it's really nice.
Yeah.
And Leonie just went, "Dee, my waters have broken." And I remember thinking, oh, I'm so tired. Like, please, I just want to go to sleep.
Yeah.
But once I was up, we went to the bathroom and Leonie sat on the toilet for most of it.
That was
like, we learned that from the first time, because from the first time everything came out like really quick. So we thought, okay, be in the place for things to come out in. And I was holding Leonie's hand and I felt so empathetically and compassionately connected to her through her hand. She just gripped my hand the entire time. I would set up the birth pool and then I'd like hose her down in the birth pool. I felt like I was hosing like an animal or something because she was just in such a primal state.
Yeah.
And she's just like, hose me down. and that was it basically. I was sort of just guardian of the space then. So my role has definitely changed a lot.
Had you guys sort of talked about that ahead of time, or did it just end up being what happened at the time? Did you kind of set those almost like rules or guidelines for each other in the kind of pregnancy? Was there like a conversation about, right, this time around, I want you to do this, this, and this, and not that, you know, or was it more just an organic thing that happened at the births?
Yeah. It was mostly an organic thing that happened, although it had some good building blocks had been put in place by first and foremost developing our relationship with one another. So basically birth was just like an intensified few moments within the relationship dynamic. So if the relationship dynamic is sound and good and you've been putting work in, then that is very conducive with birthing together. And we just had chats, and I think chatting is amazing, isn't it? It's just like...
Communication's really, key, yeah.
Absolutely, it really helps you to understand each other. It sounds like you two did loads of chatting, which is...
Oh, God, yeah, maybe too much chatting. But that is an issue, though. Again, when I work with a couple... I think it's really nice that they come to speak to me about something because it's in that space that they have that conversation. Because a lot of the time I'll say, oh, you know, did you did you know that they felt that way? And they'll go, they'll look at each other and go, I had no idea you felt like that. And I think actually couples can do that a bit. They assume and they kind of preempt, and they're not actually saying the things that need to be said. I mean, we said a lot of things. Do you think we had a lot of useful conversations?
Well, yeah, they're all awkward and uncomfortable as some of them can be, they are always useful because you're always moving forward. You're always talking through, even if you've talked about that every night of the week for the last 2 weeks, you're still going to get to a point. Whereas I think if you don't talk about it, all that's going to happen is you're always going to sort of put up walls and you're just going to, you know, distance yourself a bit and not talk about the issue that's on everyone's mind. So I think despite how many conversations we have and how in depth and deep and involved they might go, there's always a reason and a purpose.
Yeah, definitely.
I totally agree.
Yeah.
I find a lot of your conversations tend to be you trying to understand or process something, and my input is kind of to help you kind of digest that, I suppose, and understand it, but then and then my input can sometimes cause friction on how you're feeling about it, but then eventually maybe we get somewhere or maybe we don't sometimes, but you know.
Oh god, definitely. We definitely have that dynamic. I think this is a pretty common thing where I will talk to you about how I'm feeling about something. So we, you know, talked about the birth a lot, and I'm not looking for your input particularly. I'm looking for you to listen to me talk about it so I can figure out how the hell I feel about it, because I need that sounding board. I need you to just listen so I can, because I think a lot of it, you know, I knew I never needed your permission to birth at home without medical assistance. And again, I think that speaks to our relationship. Like, we're just not, we don't have that dynamic of I don't know, I'm not, you know, I think, you know, one of my core beliefs of our connection is if something's deeply important to either one of us, the other one will listen to that and appreciate that, you know. And it might not be an easy get there, but you know, I feel like we're understanding of each other. But I would need to talk about the subject of, yeah, giving birth without anyone there to make myself understand how I felt about it more than it was to do with how you felt about it. Because I think I had a lot of, oh God, I don't know how I feel about this. I kind of want it, but I'm also a bit terrified. So we'd go round. But I do think often you'd feel like I was asking you for like an answer or to fix things.
As soon as you bring up, I'm going to do this, then my knee-jerk response, especially when it's like something as huge as giving birth and the sort of gravity of that, if you're like, I'm going to do this, and I'm like, I don't think that's, you know, in my initial reaction is maybe that's not safe, maybe that's this, maybe that's, you know, so then I'm instantly going, well, maybe, you know, I don't know about this, X, Y, and Z, and then the conversation gets a little bit, you know, grittier.
Yes.
But then it's kind of like, it's, you know, you've got to start somewhere, I suppose. But I think that's the trouble maybe a lot of people have, is that these conversations are uncomfortable and difficult.
Yeah.
And somebody saying one thing doesn't necessarily mean that is what you're going to do. But then somebody also having that knee-jerk reaction doesn't also mean, oh, we don't understand each other and we'll, you know, this is madness, let's just not talk about it. It's kind of, actually, those are the things you need to talk about even more, because they're the bits that you've got to be a team on.
Absolutely.
It.
That's a direct question that somebody sent in, actually. What's the most uncomfortable conversation you've ever had?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That's a good one.
Would you like to come on our podcast?
No.
Number one.
I think they mean most about uncomfortable conversation about the birth. Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Oh God!
I don't know.
Well, do you? Because I was gonna ask, like, you know, do you remember us having a conversation about what if the baby dies?
Yeah, I was about to say it's probably death, isn't it?
Yeah,
I think there was certainly a point during our second pregnancy where you were definitely, I could tell you were basically going to try and free birth, but you hadn't said as such. You were still like, oh yeah, maybe we'll do this.
Yeah,
and I kind of said in my mind of like, I don't know if I ever actually said it to you, maybe at one point after the birth, but it was kind of like, okay, what if something happens, then it's your fault, basically.
Yeah.
It's like, I'm just going to blame you. That's kind of my I don't know, my way of coping with it, I suppose, isn't it? And that's not very nice, but I remember feeling at the time, because it's so pressured and it's such a big decision, and it didn't feel like it was particularly, at times, in my hands. It wasn't like, it was supposed to be a joint choice, but it felt more like it was your choice than my choice. It certainly got a little bit uncomfortable, but then, like I say, you kind of just keep going on these feelings, don't you? And you keep going to a point, and then you just arrive in a better place somehow. I don't know. It's just,
you know what, Dave? I admire that you didn't try to control things.
Oh, I did. And like,
no, what I mean is like to put so much pressure on that you didn't allow your wife to express.
Well, I don't know how I would stop her. Like, how. I mean, I suppose I could secretly call midwives, but then
you could, yeah, you could have called. Actually,
but then how? But then what's the point of that?
Right sting.
Yeah. I could have, but then that would only be basically just making things worse, wouldn't it? I knew that if I
and it's good that you can see that because I think there's a lot of people that don't see that and they actually just make things a lot worse.
Mm. Yeah, and I think if you like you were saying earlier about it's kind of a reflection of how your relationship as well. If you're a strong relationship and you're not just doing things maliciously to each other, then you're not going to do that during the labor and the birth.
I do remember that. I do remember feeling like, if this baby dies, I wonder if we will continue as a couple, because I did get the sense of, I think you would blame me, but then I would probably, I think at that point too, I think I would have also, and I mean, it's probably very common, I probably would have blamed myself to some extent, or there would have been a whole processing journey of that experience, because I mean, it's obviously such a huge thing to go through. But I do remember thinking that was a thing between us, and I don't know. I mean, I honestly think that I considered that and I knew that, and I think it was just part of my, but does that make me want to birth with a midwife round then? Is that a reason to invite one round or go somewhere else? And it didn't. And that almost sounds a bit mad, because it's quite a big, because I'm effectively then saying, I guess, that my decision of birthing in the way I felt was best trumped you blaming me for the death of our baby. But I mean, honestly, I think it felt that way, though. I think I just really firmly didn't believe that that would either happen. I mean, it could happen. It does happen sometimes. It could happen. But then, maybe then I thought we would be able to work through that. But I do remember that being a thing. Do you think that's changed now, though? You know, if we had another baby, and made the same choices and decisions and stuff, and say there was a loss, do you feel like you've got a different perspective on that? Or do you still feel like that's an area where you're like, I don't know?
No, I do think it's a different perspective. I think there's still a little part of me inside that would still be a bit like, it feels more like a choice to do this. So there's still like something there that kind of makes me feel a little bit like it could have been helped. But then, you can say that with every situation, can't you? But I think, we'd certainly be a million times more confident in everything we're doing about it from just our past experiences, and I wouldn't have any concerns about it going forward. But I suppose if it did happen, I don't think I would blame you, but I might look on things differently, I suppose. But then I think that's sort of natural. But then again, logically, it's just an emotional response, isn't it? So eventually you'd kind of maybe see more of, this is how it goes sometimes, and these things can't be helped sometimes. But
it's another area of looking into, isn't it? Because I don't think we had. Because I would always talk to people about, well, what are you guys thinking about, death and stuff? Have you had these conversations? Because I don't think we actually really had it in clear terms. I think it was, occasionally we did, but then I was a bit of that classic, oh, I don't really want to talk about that because that's a bit of a scary thought. And so I don't really want to lean into that area.
It's also not something we've really got experience of, you know.
What, death?
Pets have died and yeah. grandparents and things, but it's not really like rife in our life. So it's hard to really comprehend
grasp
it in a way.
It, yeah. I suppose. Yeah. Mm. Yeah. But I don't think we'd have the conversation. And I think maybe we would have more of that conversation now. But then I think...
Pretty sure we've already had it, haven't we?
We've obviously talked more about that since, yeah, because it's become something I am more aware and interested in, I think, now anyway, especially with the work I do. But yeah, I don't know, I think the death thing, I suppose that was probably our most uncomfortable conversation, as people were asking. But then I don't know that we had it, I don't think we did enough of it. I think we probably maybe could have done more. Talking about that
more uncomfortable.
But more about that topic in particular. Oh, yeah, I think it maybe
did get to a point of just like, fine, then you've made a decision, we'll just go along with that.
Yeah,
it kind of being a bit of a, you know, I don't know, just, yeah, me almost giving up on it, I suppose.
Yeah, there was definitely a bit in that, to be totally honest, of,
but I
you
think I kind
going
of think
along
though,
with it,
to
know?
Be a good birth partner, there has got to be a little bit of accepting that your partner's choice is ultimately, you know, more important than yours in a way. You know, you have got a voice and it's very important, but at the end of the day, I feel like, you know, it's your birth, it's your body, it's
baby's coming out of me,
you're the one actually doing it all, so it's kind of got to be, you know, you've got to be comfortable to make it happen. Up to a point.
It is tough. What about you guys in terms of most uncomfortable conversation? What would you feel like it was?
Well, for me, you know, but a side point from that is also this fear of being blamed. We didn't have much of the death conversation at all, to my memory. I could be wrong, but with our eldest, apart from a relative of mine got very upset when I told them that we weren't going to be having midwives, like freaked out, kind of upset, saying, oh my god, the baby's going to die, you're, you know, like, but really scared, not angry. And I was just so sure that what we were doing was safe.
That really helped us, didn't it?
Yeah, it really did. I was very shocked because it was a very close relationship of mine.
It almost strengthened where we were and our solidarity together. Because we were sort of perceiving what it was like for somebody else to get really, really worried and scared.
Yeah.
And that made us sort of like come together and to reassure that person.
Yeah.
And if, to reassure that person, we had to be sure within ourselves.
Yeah, because I do remember feeling wobbled, like, well, is it true? What they're saying, is that true? And, you know, I don't want to just dismiss what people are saying, particularly somebody that I'm so close to, but... It was just, you know, we circled back round to our original point because we'd been on that, you know, process of over many months of getting to that point. And then one day I just announced it to somebody and they're like, whoa, what do you mean?
Yeah.
So I really, you know, had a lot of empathy. But I think that was the extent of it until with our second child when my dad died. So that was, you know, when I was pregnant. So we were very much, and me in particular, but also you, were very much in the, you know, we were talking about death a lot.
Yeah,
It was very current for us. And so the next obvious step was, well, okay, well, what if this baby dies?
Yeah.
And, but I don't know how it was for you, but for me, that I'd made my peace with death. And it was more, I was terrified, actually, of being blamed. Worried, about being judged because
and penalized for your decision. You thought that there'd be like some involvement from authorities and you'd get in trouble. Yeah,
because I understood and we understood how we got to that point, but to most of the people, they think we're nuts.
Yeah, as you're saying it, you kind of like, I remember feeling a bit like it was a sort of taboo thing to even bring up to most people I knew. Friends, you know, people at work, the general public perception, it was kind of like, I always just said, oh, we're just planning a home birth. I never really went any more than that. And then even when our second was born, I didn't really tell many people that actually there was no one there and we did this rebirth thing. It was more like, oh yeah, we just had a home birth. It went really well. It was like really nice. And oh yeah, they didn't even, the midwives didn't make it. Or, you know, yeah. You kind of, it's almost like a taboo. You don't want to speak about it because you don't want to be like tarnished with this brush of like, oh, this sort of weirdo outsider. You kind of get this peer pressure, even though it's ridiculous because actually everyone else's view is just, you know, and it's like you said, that your relative's response, that kind of extreme, like, oh, you're doing this to a baby. I think a lot of people have that response to these things because it's so emotional to them as well, and their birth might have been an emotional thing that happened, and it's kind of almost their instinctive gut responses
imprint. Like fear. There's actually circles
there's
different circles of people. So like there's that camp that we were just talking about that think it's crazy and they're quite judgmental in a negative way. But then we were living in Bristol at the time of our second, and there's loads of circles which were like totally glorifying the fact that we had our first child in a bell tent, and they just thought it was amazing and really cool.
But I still didn't speak very publicly about it until our third.
Yeah.
I realised I still didn't, I mean, within our close friends, but I really, that's when I started to go like public about it and share our stories.
Yeah.
Even then, it was a bit of like, oh yeah, I wasn't midwife, and I felt a bit like, is it safe to share? Are we gonna be this feeling of like nobody's gonna understand from the other side, like from the medical side, so how can we possibly bridge that gap? I'm just gonna avoid it because that feels like I just don't know how to do that.
It's just too much of a jump for people, isn't it? It's kind of like they've jumped, they're just used to, you go into hospital, you have a baby, anything can happen. And then to suddenly go, actually, you can do this. And it's the complete opposite.
Yeah.
There's no like bridging. And I think people find that really hard.
Because I mean, you know, we're obviously really firmly in the circles of talking to loads of people that feel like free birth's totally okay. And like, really, it's been super normalized to you and I now with the amount of stories that we have. But I forget about the, you know, the steps where people even are quite wowed by, oh, you had an unmedicated hospital birth. That's something. You know, like you didn't have an epidural or something, or you didn't have, you know, surgery or anything. And then that's still within a hospital. And then home birth, certainly. Because do you remember with our first baby, we went to the super like conventional, well, NHS antenatal class. We were the only one in that circle that were planning a home birth at all, and it very much felt like, you know, everybody else was, I mean, there was just so much conversation about, you know, here are the drugs you can have, and we were space aliens going there, weren't we?
Yeah, and I think that's where all this kind of uncomfortableness, sort of talking about it, starts, isn't it? Because even at that point, we were a bit like the outsiders,
weirdos, like,
what are they doing? They're crazy to think that. Good luck to you, that sort of feeling.
I think what's coming up a lot in this conversation, for me at least, I don't know about you guys, but like community and relationship coming up a lot, like what circle you're part of has a real effect on what you're thinking and feeling, and how strong your connection is between the two people in the relationship is really important.
I think that's why you get a lot of these questions about my birth partner's struggling to get on board, my partner doesn't want to do this, or they're really against this, because they're not part of that same community that you are. They're not the ones going through Instagram and, you know, following the people and joining the groups and talking to other women in the the normal boring free birth Facebook community.
Dave, would you give the advice to a birth partner to actually like be a part of their partner's world? Do you say that would help?
It would, but I think that part of themselves, it's got to be really hard to get on board with it all if it's just not your cup of tea, so to speak. It's like, you know, you could have invited me to all these things. We did do a bit of the stuff and all of that, but that's more your thing than mine. So it, whilst I'm not like, oh, this horrible cult you've joined or whatever, you know, it's more like, I don't know. I think it's really to expect a birth partner to be as fully invested as you are. I think is a bit idealistic. I don't think that should be the approach. It shouldn't be like, you must be as invested as I am. They can be supportive in different ways, but I think it's just understanding each other. It's like not, telling you not to do that, I suppose. I don't know, it's hard to know.
I know what you mean, because I get, again, I'll have I'll have sessions with a woman and she'll say, oh, my partner's not, I'm really disappointed in them because they're not doing the work that I'm doing. They're not watching the videos I send them. They're not listening to the podcast. Hopefully they listen to this one. They're not doing all the things that they really want them to do. So then they feel a bit insulted because they're not putting, or they feel like they're not putting the effort in. But I just think it's always different. I think when you're the one that's going to go through it physically, I really feel there's a huge difference between mother and father, the roles, the way it feels, the experience you have. And so I don't know that I ever looked to you and expected you to be as up to speed or as in, actually, no, that is nonsense. I did. I had times where I did. I also felt like, oh, it is a bit, is it a snub at me that you're not doing these things? Does it mean that you're not, you don't care, or that you're not as invested and everything? Because I kind of want you to take this as seriously as I am. But I just don't think, that was needed.
I think it's hard to have the emotional connection when as the partner, when you're not like physically involved in the growing and the birth of the baby until there's actually something here. I think a lot of guys are probably quite practical and just like, oh, well, what's my job during this? Well, I'll do this, and this.
Yeah.
Which is fine up to a point. But yeah, there needs to be some sort of emotional investment. But I think it's not as huge as yours. I think it's kind of
different. I would say if you could do something, if the couple could do something together, even if it's just like once a week, you just a little something together, just to sort of like,
even just talking about the subject, or you know, looking at something together, like you know, or like you say, listening to something or watching something. There's loads of stuff everywhere.
Exactly.
You know, and if you're doing that together and you're both on board, one can be still miles ahead than the other, but it's still doing little steps together that bring you together.
That's really true. And actually, I don't even think it needs to be birth related. Like I think again, I've spoken to couples who don't spend a huge amount of time with each other. They're both incredibly busy. They kind of pass and some of the time it's like the more you talk, it will crop up that, oh, you're never really around each other that much, yet you're planning this birth where you're thinking that your partner's going to be the only other one in the room and you want this great amazing like connection. I think like we've been saying already in this episode, your relationship will play out in your birth. I think
absolutely,
so it looked to that, you know, and that can be really hard and heavy, and it can't, and it doesn't always feel great, but then it's just, you got to do it. It's just necessary. I think you got to do it.
Well, if you're going to be having a child together,
yeah,
it's a really good place to start. It's like getting the relationship really good for the birth.
Yeah.
Because actually, when the child is born, it's such a big thing, isn't it?
Parent
it's such
life.
A big life change. Exactly. Yeah. And you have to be strong together. Otherwise, you can't provide for your child the best that they can, you know. And not to say that like parents have to be perfect, but like if the mum and dad are a solid unit, then that's really, really positive for the baby.
And it's also not to say that the birth needs to be perfect either.
Yeah.
But if, because I know that, you know, for our eldest birth, there were some things which we needed to talk about that came up, you know, like you mentioned about you suggesting things and just kind of finding our way through that. But I think at the base of everything, our relationship was really strong, is always has been.
Yeah.
And, you know, I felt like we could just be with whatever came up.
Yeah.
And all three births have been really different, but I felt like that was a solid foundation.
We had lots of questions put to us by everyone we asked online. And we've already been covering some of them, like we said, you know, brought up a few. But we have been asked whether or not you felt like you needed, so Dave, I'll put this to you then. Did you feel like you were a replacement for a midwife? Did you feel like your role was, I'm having to do that then if they're not here? Was that a consideration at all? Did you feel like that was, you know, you have?
No, I don't think so, because I don't know quite, I mean, what would a midwife be doing apart from, you know, taking measurements and doing things that they're probably not supposed to be doing?
Hell yeah! What's the point?
I didn't really feel that way. I didn't feel like you expected me to be, I don't know, in an emergency doing something in particular. I guess it was always a kind of joint, like we're making this decision because we feel confident in what we're doing. If anything, you probably knew more than me, so you're the midwife.
Right. I definitely wasn't the midwife. But I don't think we've mentioned yet that we had a doula for our second birth, didn't we? So did that change your sense of what you were expected? Did it give you a kind of reassuring feeling?
Yeah.
We had someone there?
Yeah, and I think we did that because of we were kind of building towards this point of, well, we don't want any medical assistance there, so we'll have this doula instead, because actually the first birth was hard and it was tough getting through the labour, so we needed some support. We didn't want to do it on our own because the first time we felt a little bit lost and a bit, or certainly I did, felt a bit, you know, kind of like deer in the headlights, didn't really know what to do or quite what we were doing, and it was a bit out of control and felt a bit wild. So this time we were like, right, well, we want someone to be there because we want to do it this way. And we kind of want someone to be on our team and to help us navigate through it. So that's what we got the doula for. And actually, you know, she was really helpful. But I think when it came to the labour and the birth, we were quite comfortable. It was a really good day. It was like, you know, 24 hours of labour, which was quite relaxed for me. Not, you know, you were doing amazing.
Oh, it was a huge contrast to the first one.
Yeah, night and day. It was crazy. And we, you know, the doula was around for what, a couple of hours maybe?
I think it's a fairly good question. We've been asked by someone, how did you feel about seeing your partner in a really raw primal state, and, you know, including everything from noises, maybe doing a poo, lots of blood, that kind of thing. I think that can be a concern for a lot of women. I mean, I still see this conversation do the rounds on the internet of, oh no, I'm going to poo in front of my partner or stuff like that. And I know, I get it, because it's just, we've got all these boundaries or whatever, and you know, our own personal space and stuff, and it can be quite revealing and a whole different way of, it can feel quite exposing even to our partners. But was there, I don't know, how did you feel about seeing, I'll just ask you, Dave, first, but how did you feel about seeing me in a state that was more primal and open and raw and everything?
I think the first time it was pretty awful. You know, it's quite terrifying, like, obviously more for you, but I think the whole experience, because it was so, you were caught off guard, it was much more intense and painful and hard to get through. You know, I sort of saw a side of you that you don't really want to see, not in a like you were awful, I just mean like you just looked, you know, like it was very difficult.
It's
not can be not nice, but it's also, you know, I suppose it's part of it. But then like I say, the second birth was completely different, and there was a brief glimpse right near the end of like, oh, I remember this. This is sort of when you're into that phase of it becoming almost too overpowering that it's almost, you can't keep it under control anymore.
Yeah.
But then obviously for us, that's like,
it was really quick, wasn't it?
I think it felt like it was more that moment for however many hours the first birth was, 24 hours.
Well, I think that's the difference with our experiences though, is that the first birth was, I never used the word like, I honestly don't think it was like, it wasn't traumatic, but it was really emotionally heightened and like tough and it was just not nice. You know, I was just really freaking out. You're seeing me be really freaked out, and that was really, really tough. But I think that's the difference. You know, that's a hell of a lot more created by the situation though, I think. I think it's different.
But having said all that, it is still kind of, as you were saying earlier, Dee, like mind blowing in what you actually watch and what you're doing. And I remember coming away thinking, like, just so much kind of respect, I suppose, if that's the right word. Yeah, it's kind of is a respect. It's kind of like you suddenly go like, wow, that's like so huge that for you to be able to go through that and do that, that it's really hard for us to even like comprehend doing that sort of thing in a weird way. And I kind of,
yeah, I do remember, I feel like you were pretty wowed, like when we had, you know, our second, I remember you feeling a bit, or saying things that it really sounded like, yeah, you know, that's how we should do it, you know. That was that.
Oh,
was...
I'm so proud of you. Oh. You know, you did amazing.
Say more nice things about me. Yeah.
Well, you are. But it's just yeah, you know, it's like, I don't know, it's it you know, I think watching someone give birth is kind of, you can go through all kinds of states. You might not go through some, but you might go through others. But I think for the question of, you know, what's it like seeing your partner like this, it's kind of, it's all kind of extremes, but it could also be all kinds of amazing and lovely and incredible to witness and be a part of. So, you know, yeah, you might see some poo, or you might see some things, or you might see your partner in distress, but you might also see your partner like just like blossoming and being this incredible birthing warrior.
Oh, thanks. But you weren't bothered about, I didn't actually poo. I wouldn't have cared if I had, but I didn't, did I? Because I didn't eat very much.
Is this a question? Did the readers write in about this one?
The gory bits, like, I know it's beautiful what you've said, but the gory bits, I think people are worried about. Like, were you worried about seeing blood and stuff? Were you worried about that?
No, not really. I suppose it's just part of it. You kind of like, I don't know. I think when you're going through it, that's probably bottom of the list.
Yeah.
These things just happen and you're like, okay, this is now this and this is now this.
Well, maybe that's it more, is that you don't actually, because it's all part of it, you're not thinking about those bits. Whereas I think actually when you're pregnant, though, you do worry about, oh, are they going to see me poo? Or are they going to be freaked out by all the blood and everything? And actually, like you say, when it's happening, you're not really fixating on those parts because they're just part of a bigger thing.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so.
That's pretty good. Yeah, yeah. Because I think it's a legit concern from people, is that they're worried about either freaking out their partners, or they're just not going to be able to handle an experience that's, yeah, like not the ordinary every day. And women are usually, or, you know, it can be a classic female trait to be so put together and, you know, very kind of in a certain way. Mm. And birth is so, it's just so different and open and vulnerable and everything. What about you guys then? Was there ever any, I mean, like, Leonie, were you worried about, I don't know, were you worried about all the primal gory bits in regards to how Dee might react to that? Or were you just like, nah, he's going to smash it, it's fine?
No, I knew he'd smash it because, well, with the first one in particular, I have done a lot of work in terms of coming back into my body and relearning some basic processes. Like, we spent quite a long time. I was learning how to pee again and not hold my urine. Like, I was, and that was a really intimate thing that we were sharing.
She used to get infections, didn't you?
Yeah, I used to get, yeah.
And you actually, by learning how to, I know it sounds silly, but by learning how to like fully relax when you're weeing, you let out all the wee properly, and then you stop getting the infections, which I thought was really cool.
And I was like, wow, that's really, yeah, what a cool, but also I got a sense that it was something really basic that I needed to relearn. So I was a bit of a tangent, but you seeing me in that state felt really intimate and really beautiful.
Yeah.
And so I felt almost like I really wanted you to see that part of me, because I'd never seen that part of me before and I'd never shared that with anybody.
Yeah.
And so I felt even more in love with you, because yeah, it's just like that deepening intimacy between us.
Yeah, we had like good preparation of like being quite intimate and raw before the actual birth. It wasn't, you know, like the birth was very different, you know, like with the birth of Ira, our first, we were out in the bell tent. So we were using buckets, and all of a sudden, within like 3 minutes, Leonie had pooed, weed, and thrown up in the same bucket, and I had had to catch them all.
Wow, that's interesting.
And I was just like, whoa, okay. Yeah. Was not expecting that.
Like, that's how I burst.
Proper clear out.
Yeah. So I, and then she was making these noises like that I'd never heard her make ever, like very, very animalistic noises. Yeah, very animalistic. And
I loved it.
And I was just like, I'm really glad we're outside right now.
Yeah.
Because yes. if we were inside and like my mum and dad were hearing this, I'd feel really weird about it.
Someone will hear this, they'll just think it's a fox.
Yeah. And actually for our third, Leonie was making quite different noises because she was in pain. Oh. Like not before.
Yeah.
You were howling. And we actually got a knock on the wall from our neighbour.
Oh, God.
Yeah, I don't know what they thought was going on, but like...
Oh, God, weird sex.
Yeah.
I was like, do they think that we're having sex? This is the weird... that would be the weirdest sex noise in the world. Like, if they do realise that you're giving birth and they've just knocked on the wall, they're an idiot, do you know?
Yeah. Oh dear.
Like, that's not something to interrupt.
No.
But I was humbled to see Leonie in that state.
Yeah.
Because it broke down my expectations of what we should be like. Yeah. You know, like,
yeah.
We've got all these ideas built up of how we should behave. And then when you see somebody who's going through something where they cannot behave in a socially acceptable way, so to speak, and they are behaving in this really raw and unfiltered way, not out of choice necessarily, but more out of like surrender to what they're going through.
Yeah.
That's like, I found it quite humbling. I was like. Whoa, you know, it was shocking as well. It was humbling and shocking. I did feel shocked about the blood with Isaac the second, because he was in the bath and I'd never seen, you know, when it got mixed with water, I was like, whoa, is that too much? I was like, is that too much blood? Like, is this a bad thing?
Mm-hmm.
But I was just trusting that, you know, if there was a problem, Leonie would say.
Yeah.
And you know, she seemed fine. Mm-hmm. You know, she seemed like everything was normal.
I want to ask about expectation versus reality then. And I'll direct it at you guys first then. Because, I mean, you both really positive about the idea of free birthing, both very into it and everything. Great. When it actually happened... Do you feel like, what was the kind of impact of that, or how did it sort of change you, or what was your reaction and feeling of like when it actually happened? I mean, bearing in mind, you're both like pretty positive about it anyway, but when you actually had that experience and you did free birth, how did you feel then in that kind of moment?
Yeah, it's a really good question. I don't think that I had, I definitely wasn't prepared for how I would feel at the birth and after. Okay. It absolutely blew my mind.
All right.
I literally did not know what, like when my boy came into my arms, when he came into my hands, my first child, I literally didn't know what was happening. It blew my mind. I was like, what is going on? I remember I caught him and then I was like, whoa. And I really gently laid him down on the soft rug. And then I like collapsed backwards, crying and laughing at the same time.
Oh wow.
It was such a intense moment. I was never the same again after that. Mm. And I just wasn't expecting that at all. Mm. And then for our second baby, Again, that took me totally by surprise because it was a really different experience of the birth, holding Leonie's hand and having all of that like empathy and connection. Mm-hmm. And it was so quick. It was just an hour and a half. Oh
my God.
Whereas with our first, it was like 8 hours. It was like all night.
Yeah.
And it was like a saga. Yeah, yeah.
It's still really fast. Yeah, that's really quick. But yeah.
Yeah, but like 8 hours of, and it was through the night as well. So it was like that vigil, like staying up.
Yeah.
And so I was like getting ready for that sort of thing. And then with the second one, it just sort of like just happened an hour and a half. And it was like,
that is so speedy.
Yeah, that was really intense. And it's over. And
yeah, there's almost no time to get used to it, is there, when it's that quick?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like kind of get into the, yeah.
I didn't mind it. I didn't mind it. I was like, cool, that was short. I'm like, yeah, all right.
That would probably have been quite nice. Yeah.
I sort of weirdly remember being like, because the first birth was such a intense, you know, quite upsetting experience.
Yeah.
And when he was finally born, it was really, really hit me. And it was just like this big wave of emotion. I remember crying. And it was, you know, it was all like such, it was almost like a release of, oh, finally the baby's been born and we've got through this and, you know, he's okay and all this.
Yeah.
And then I sort of remember the second birth being slightly underwhelmed in a way because it was like, because it just happened so naturally and so perfectly. I remember sort of flopping out on the floor. It was just like, it was still a big moment, but I think because it wasn't that same rush of adrenaline, I think it was a different feeling. I think there was much more of a relief and a kind of release of all this emotion and my body just going, when the first one came.
Yeah.
When the second one was just like normal and boring, it was like, it was still amazing, but it was different. I think I expected it to be this giant peak of, like I say, adrenaline surging through. Yeah. And then actually it was much more, like you were saying earlier, it's like peace. It's kind of that kind of just naturally happens. And it was like, this is still amazing. And it also, she came really quick. Suddenly it was like, it's on, she's coming, rather than, you know, hours of labour and then suddenly it was happening.
Well, yeah, I said only two births, but for both of them, same amount of time. It was like 24 hours from first twinge to then babe. But that last bit was like, has always, both times, has been very quick, isn't it? Of, because, you know, first time when we were in hospital and I'm having vaginal exams, they're going, you know, oh, you're not very dilated. And then towards the end, it's like, oh, you're 5. Oh, you're 7. Oh, there's a baby coming. And it was all very, very quick towards the end. And I think it must have been the same with my daughter, our second birth, because it felt, I definitely reached a point of, oh God, when's she going to get here? And then there was lots of, oh God, this is a really intense contraction. And then, like you said, I remember I was leaning on you and just kind of shouting, no, no. I remember doing that quite a bit. Although you say it was really fast, but then leaning on you and then the doula was behind me and then she kind of just shot out behind me, didn't she, really, on, like you say, onto the floor a bit, fine. And then I picked her up. But yeah, it was sort of quick towards the end.
But I think it's just because, you know, the first birth is such an unknown for most. And it's that, you know, first time of doing something, all this anticipation and all this, you know, everyone's talking about all the build up and all the hype and all that kind of stuff, that it's this huge event. And then actually the sort of reality is, it is really normal. And it's still very, you know, not something you do every day, but it's kind of like, you know, this still huge experience, but just so natural, really, in a way.
I think it's good it was underwhelming.
Oh, definitely. I'll definitely 100% choose that option. The difference is down to you. It was like the first one, we were underprepared, weren't expecting it, caught you off guard, and it just sort of derailed everything.
Yeah.
Second time, you were so much more confident and comfortable in your body and what you're doing that it was just like watching a different person give birth.
I think this is quite a good question because it's just a more practical one. And I think a lot of birth partners want to know the practical bits as well as the deeper emotional stuff that we've covered too. But I mean, in terms of tools that we used during labour then, and the kind of things that were effective in helping, you know, me and everything. Do you remember what was the most effective? You know, what kind of thing do you feel that you kind of helped me use, or the way you could support me that was the most useful?
It's hard because obviously everyone's going to have something different. There were some practical tools that helped you, like a TENS machine. And,
we did use a TENS.
Very practical things. And, you know, I could get it ready to go and take it off immediately when you want it off and do things, you know. You can be in that moment sort of doing as much as you can, but also there's just times where, you know, you don't even know what you want. So you kind of got to suggest but not be too over-suggestive, because that's also annoying.
Yeah.
It's a very difficult line to straddle. But it's kind of, I don't know. I don't know if I can really offer practical tips. It's more being present and knowing your partner and looking, if they're struggling, then, you know, helping them get to a better place, I suppose.
I remember we had a list. I remember I made a list and put it up in visible places of, it was more like a nice, I didn't overly write tons, I think, for the second birth, because I realised there wasn't a lot of point. But I remember making kind of list. I had a few affirmations maybe pinned around, but there were things, I mean, I remember my plan and intention was that, ooh, when labour starts, let's get all intimate and sexy. That was, do you remember that was the kind of plan?
That didn't happen.
No way at all did I feel at all romantic or amorous at all. But that was, the kind of intention. I was like, oh, you know, birth's this lovely sensual thing. You know, maybe we can just have a kiss and a cuddle and get all sexy and that might help. And no, I did not feel
like
that.
We wrote like a list of things we could do, which I think is a really good idea, because sometimes you just need to look at a list and go, let's just try something else, because why not? I'm feeling up for that. Let's give that a go just to mix things up. And if you don't have that, you've got to sit there in that moment and think of these things, which can be the hard
or
bit.
You ask your partner and then that's really annoying. Like if you'd been buzzing around going, you know, oh, okay, well, what do you need now? What about, you know, now, what are you feeling now? Then I think that's a bit disruptive, because you're then looking to me for the answer. I think it's nice to have a kind of big brain dump of words we just pinned up on the wall, and then you can just glance at that and go, oh, okay, we've not tried, I don't know, I'll offer a drink or a snack, or I bought these little soft bunnies and they were like, oh, I'm going to give this to my baby when she's born and I like how they feel, so you'd give me those occasionally. And, you know, we just had little things, or, you know, music choice or whatever, and things to smell, smells and scents and stuff I quite liked. But
we had an Arnold Schwarzenegger film.
Oh, yeah. We watched an Arnie film. That was early labour. What did we watch?
That's a pro tip, that one. Get that one out when you need to.
Yeah.
On True Lies.
True Lies. That was it. A classic. Dance sexy. Yes. Yeah. That was good. Yeah, I remember watching that. Yeah, I took a video of that. Took a photo of us watching that. But yeah, what else do we do? I'm trying to think of, like, if there was
some music. But that didn't
last
too
play
long.
Some music. I mean,
it was just the normal day.
Just
stuff,
keeping life normal. Because even first time round, my mind was more breathing techniques or something. And I was like, you know, if you breathe in this certain way, then I'll copy you and that kind of thing. But all of that, all position, like you said, we like birth positions and things. But then all of that went out the window and we weren't.
Maybe that is the practical tip, is to try and keep things as normal as possible.
Yeah.
And try not
Focus on it.
Emphasize and panic and, you know, suddenly be like, oh, it's happening now. Let's go.
Yeah,
it's
that's
more
true.
About just going, you know,
yeah,
great. Let's just go with it and kind of not overly pressure it.
Yeah.
Because as soon as you start putting pressure on, oh, these, you know, this is supposed to happen, or these are supposed to, or this is supposed to be good. Let's try it. You know, I don't know. Maybe it can be overly thought of, but then you've got to think of things. So, somewhere in the middle.
That's it. If you give a thought to some things you might want, then at least they're there as things you can try. You know, if you don't give a thought to that at all, I think maybe you miss a trick a bit. But yeah, not focus. I mean, it's having a really loose hold on expectation, on things, because it's not going to go and follow a plan like to the letter. It's going to be a bit, you know, can we ever completely anticipate and guess all of it?
Yeah, because there were some things which were really useful for us. Frozen melon, like little squares of frozen melon.
Yeah.
They were like awesome. Leonie was really appreciated them, and they're very easy to just like. She was like, "Go and get the frozen melon," and I was like, "Yeah, I can do that. Like, I can definitely do that." And billions of towels. That was so helpful, just having loads of towels, and also being on or near a toilet, because lots of stuff can come out very quick.
Yes.
Yeah. So
definitely can.
And also we had some really beautiful music that we had that we had sort of like, we'd been building up a playlist in the months previous, and we had that on, which was, you know, really, really helpful.
Oh, that's lovely. Yeah, that's really good. I mean, because I think it's really good to talk about the practical bits as well as the other things we've mentioned. Did you guys have a conversation around, yeah, what is an emergency or anything like that? Because I'm not really sure that we did, really. Did we?
We did have.
Okay, go on then, you go.
We did have a conversation about that, yeah. In fact, we had a few, like, because like I said earlier, I was very much rooted in faith and trust, and Leonie was approaching things more cautiously. So she was doing a lot of research on, you know, what can go wrong,
and what normal looks like.
What is a normal birth? What is an abnormal birth? How do we tell, and things like this? But all of that sort of went out the window. Really, it was just like. It was very. It was almost there as a backup, like a safety net.
Yeah.
Just having a little bit of awareness about what something might look like. But for instance, with our second, he came out and there was a knot in his cord.
Oh yeah.
And then we later found out that if that was medicalized and they found out, then they might have actually done something differently.
Yeah.
Nothing different needed to happen, because he came out really healthy and fine, even though there was a knot there. And if there was an intervention, that could have disrupted things.
Yeah.
So it really depends on what you define as an emergency, because there are some people who are slightly more medicalized and more based in fear also, you know, that would class something as an emergency when actually 9 times out of 10 it's not. So there's that element, and then there's also the element that whether we like it or not, we are not in control, and sometimes people die, and sometimes babies die, and sometimes there's nothing that we can do about that. So if we have this idea that that we are in control, and that we need to be doing things, that we need to be steering things like in a particular direction, and if we don't, then we've messed up and it's our fault and la-di-da, then I think that's actually can be an obstacle for somebody who wants to free birth, because. Like Leonie's mentioned to me in the past that statistically birth interventions don't necessarily actually decrease the rate of having deaths in birth that much. So it's like it's not even necessarily a fail-safe to medicalize birth. It's not to say that if you treat everything like it could be an emergency, then you're definitely going to have a child that survives. So I think there needs to be some level of surrender and trust and awareness that death is real, death could happen, and there could be an emergency, you know, that could happen to anyone. And, you know.
Yeah, and I think those conversations that we were having about what could go wrong and what we might do and what it might look like and all of that sort of processing that, for me at least, I don't know if it is for you, but it felt like a really important part of just the preparation, like kind of tying off some loose ends. You know, I've considered that, right now I feel ready, like I've done all my revision for the exam.
Yeah.
I'm going to just close my book and now I'm just going to do it, you know, like you've gone through something to then leave it.
Yeah.
And just be with whatever comes up, because I think that's more important than knowing all these pieces of information and these skills of, I'm going to be looking out for 3 centimeter like dropping this.
Yeah.
But what if something that you've never ever seen before, like how are you going to hone those skills of dealing with that?
Yeah.
If you're just fixated on learning by the letter from the textbook.
So true. Yeah.
I think it does help to have some level of understanding of these things and like doing the research in a way, because you're learning more about things. Yeah. And then every time you're learning and you're learning more about a certain situation, you're kind of moving where your line of emergency is. So for some, it's and for some, because they don't know anything about, say, meconium or something like that, that line of emergency is really early on. But then for others who know a bit more about the situation and understand what's happening and understand that it could go this way, could go this way, that line of emergency kind of moves along more. And then I feel like, you know, I think that's what happened to us. Is like, we learned so much that we felt like, okay, we know, we don't know everything, but we know enough to feel confident in going ahead and, you know, not freaking out about the slightest little thing that might pop up. And then, you know, in turn, turning that into your emergency.
Mm.
I think everyone's going to have their own different degree of what an emergency is.
Mm.
Because it's how it feels to you, especially when you can't really see or do anything, you'll feel it. So you know,
oh god, I feel like we've covered so much, I think, in this episode, which I really hope is useful to birth partners. I think it will be really good for them to hear you know, the partner voice on all of this. And I think we want to get more partners on, actually. We've got some stories in the future that are going to be shared along with partners too, which would be really good. But yeah, I think this has been a useful one. I don't know. Is there anything else, Leonie, you want to add? Because I feel like we've moved through our list of everything that people have asked us. I think we've covered like a lot. But is there anything else you want to, while we have the guys here?
I guess I would quite like to ask each of you, Dee and Dave, what's your like number one top tip for supporting your partner?
Yeah, it's a good one to end on, isn't it, really?
You can go first.
Well, I would say that if you really develop your relationship with your partner and you spend time just connecting together in intimacy and you gather knowledge together about what birth can be like if it goes really naturally and peacefully, and you gather that knowledge just so you don't have to think too much when you're actually in the birth space. So like, if you can just be present together, then that really works wonders, is just being really present and attentive, and just don't be scared, you know, just connect with each other and really get to know each other in intimacy and share in love, and don't be scared.
What Dee said.
I knew you were going to say that.
It's a really important thing. I kind of do echo it. Like, don't be scared. You know, it's a big unknown, but it's not something to be fearful of. And it's that, you've got to work together to get there. I think the typical kind of like low-key partner thing is to sort of, you know, not engage in it, not talk about it, just see it as this kind of event that's going to happen, and it will change your life, and it'll, you know, you'll never see them the same way, and it's this
in
sort
a
of,
negative way
in usually, a negative way it's set up like this kind of like big awful thing that has to happen, and then you get a baby, which just is crazy, really. But so I think the biggest tip is, to work together, talk to each other, be honest, but also be respectful, and work, you know, you're doing it together. You know, you need to be there. Embrace it. Don't just, you know, put up a wall against it and just let them get on with it. You know, you can't really do that with a birth and a baby.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think
top tip isn't be practical, be more emotional, which I know is hard for a lot of guys, but I think
it can be so difficult.
This is 2024. Yeah. Get on board.
It's a modern world. You can feel emotions. I know. Yeah. It's so difficult, isn't it? And it's, but then I think they're both, yeah, really good messages to all the partners listening, hopefully, who've been sent this episode by your exasperated partner going, could you just bloody listen to something about free birth, please? There's this amazing episode that you need to hear. So I hope that's you.
Yeah, if you skip to the end, you got the right bit there.
Oh, goodness. Yeah, yeah. Well, that's really good. Yeah, okay, that's amazing. And we've covered lots of useful things here that I think would be really good. And I mean, also, we don't really have guys in our Facebook community, but I'm not against it. Actually, I think we've got maybe one. We did have someone join and say, oh, I'm so-and-so's husband. Do you mind if I'm here? And I'm like, no, that's fine. You know, we have a normal Boring Free Birth women's circle, and we do keep that as just a female space. But I think our Facebook community, like, goodness, you know, if you're listening to this and you want to get more involved in talking about free birth, you're totally welcome to join that space. I think maybe let us know that you're someone's partner, because it is obviously a personal, you know, people are doing really personal shares. But yeah, I think if you want to get involved and connect to others, then you can do that and join us in that group. We'll leave a link to that in the notes of this show as well. But I think other than that, I'm just going to extend thanks to the two of you for joining us here and for still talking about birth and everything, even though, well, you guys are, you are expecting your fourth, but we're not. And you're still finding that we're having long conversations about birth still and pregnancy. So it didn't end. It didn't end with the birth.
The beginning.
Yeah, I know. It was just
tip of the iceberg.
I know it was. It just was the beginning. God. But yeah, thanks so much, guys, for joining us on this and sharing everything and being so open and emotional. And I think that will help and encourage others to do the same with their partners, because it is so necessary and it's so important too. And then the outcome of doing that is great. But yeah, thanks for coming on and sharing all of your thoughts. Was it as bad as you'd expected it would be?
We'll talk after this is ended. No, it was great. Thank you.
Thank you, guys. It's been really fun.
It's really nice to hear from you guys as well.
It was.
It was just really insightful.
Yeah, I almost forget this is an episode. It's just nice to connect with the two of you because, you know, we don't live super close, do we? But we have met up. And I'm even learning about what you're planning to do or what you have done. It's been really nice to hear too.
Yeah. Same to you guys. Thank you.
All right.
Okay, you sleep well, guys.
See you later.
Thank you both. Really appreciate getting together and sharing.
Definitely. Oh, it's been a pleasure. Lots of love.
Hope to speak soon.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Bye.
Bye, loves. Bye.
If you have enjoyed listening to these stories, we'd love to hear from you. Take a screenshot, share your thoughts. We'd love to hear how you found these amazing stories. You can tag us, tag our Instagram accounts, share with your friends, get in touch. We'd love to hear from you.